Had to work clean for an hour and it was hard.
Yeah. I was gonna say.
It's,
and then am I doing both on or one off?
Anything you want, whatever works. This it there you go.
Oh, so it's
and
just
then
like
you want
that? That's it.
Yeah, and you want to be like 6 inches away.
Okay.
Here. Perfect. Actually, can you jump a little closer?
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
And just move.
Oh, okay. Maybe. But I want to see you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Why? No, I just had to work clean for an hour, and yeah. It's really hard.
That is hard.
But what's funny is like shows like this where we're just talking. And we're not doing covers. So half my shows are musicians, right?
Right.
And 80% of those musicians do covers.
That's so cool. I listened to a couple of those.
Oh, cool. But they can't put them on Spotify
for
copyright. Can't put them anywhere except Mixcloud and the site. So shows like this where they can go on Spotify,
yeah.
They have a box where you have to check if it has explicit content or not.
Got it.
All my shows.
If
you go on Spotify, explicit content.
Real life is explicit.
So, do you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. I'm Jana. I have so many names, but my author name is Jana Brooke Wallach.
Okay.
My actual name is Jana Cowan.
Okay.
And I wrote a book. And my book came out in March. I'm
Naked Girl.
Naked Girl.
Okay.
By Jana Brooke Wallach.
And we can get this.
You can get it everywhere online.
Okay.
Barnes & Noble, Amazon primarily, but Lulu and Kobo, Apple Books, Google Books. You can get it at Oblong Books locally. You can get it at Blue Heron Books locally. And you can ask in your local bookshop, which I would love for you to ask in your local independent bookstore, because I'd much prefer, you know, the sales go through the little bookshops. But
you're a nice person.
Yeah.
Did you see my post yesterday?
No.
You made a post that you were coming on.
Yeah.
So I copied it. And I put, this woman can write the fuck out of a book.
Oh, my God. Thank you. I have to go look for
it. Really, really good.
Thank you.
So
I'm running out of things to post. I'm not a good poster. I'm amazed by how many things I'll see on Instagram all day. People are so creative and
I'm
a blank.
It's a job. And it's hard. Like, it's hard for somebody like you because you're a writer. So Facebook is home because you can put, like, more than one paragraph together if you want to. But, like, on Instagram and – you know, accent, you can't, it's three lines and out.
Yeah.
And I can't tell a story in three lines.
If anyone who knows me will laugh when you say that, because I have trouble getting to the end. I use a lot of words.
But
I use a lot of words.
Use them well.
Thank you.
All right. So you grew up crazy.
I grew up crazy.
Yeah.
But good, crazy.
Good, crazy. Yeah. Right. But crazy.
Because the book is fiction. You know, there's a lot from my
life. All
right.
You know what I'm going to ask.
Folds in what's true and what's not.
I wouldn't do that, but what's the percentage?
Oh, God. I'd give it – I think that the book properly – I think what I really put forth in the book was my emotional journey as a child.
Okay.
So the emotions are true.
Okay.
But as the neglect that these kids experience in the book, I didn't experience it. So my mom is alive and well.
Okay.
And I have had a stepfather who's like my other father since I was 5.
Okay.
And then I have my father, and I've been going back and forth, you know, my whole childhood between the two worlds. And in my home world was big sprayed bangs and slouchy socks of the 80s and lip gloss and Hebrew school and packed lunches and Little Debbies and a total like 80s, you know, childhood. But it was a step family, and there was all kinds of crazy dynamics in the step family. 5 kids, yours, mine, and ours. Like, they had my little brother together, and then my mom had 2 and he had 2. And that was a whole world of good and bad. And then my dad on the weekends, I think that he sort of, much in the way of most people in the 1960s, which is why divorce really caught on in the early 70s,
right?
You know, found themselves 22 and married with kids before they even. I have a 23-year-old daughter.
No, you do not.
I do, and that's not my oldest. She's my oldest that I gave birth to. I have a 40-year-old son who I adopted. Later.
Okay,
I have a 21-year-old son. And well, she'll be 23 and he'll be 22. They're close together. And they are brilliant, beautiful, independent people. But as an adult, they're toddlers. So you're like, you turn, yeah. you become an adult at 18 somehow, apparently.
Yeah.
And then by the time you're 22, you're married and you have children.
Right.
And no offense to anyone who's already doing that. It's amazing. But you haven't had a lot of practice at
You have made a 100% decision with 80% of your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have not fully developed right. yet. You don't even, you haven't tried anything. You haven't had any kind of massive failure yet. Of course, I'm talking about me, other people.
When you get married at 23 or 22, you will have a massive failure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, God bless my friends who have been married for 25 years. It's amazing. I'm also got divorced. I got married at 25.
I have an anti-marriage rant. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
So I think marriage as currently, I'm being serious. I think it should be illegal.
Yeah.
And my argument is this.
Oh, I love these tirades. Go.
If you went to a bank
yeah.
and legally had to put all your money in that bank, and 50% of the time that bank failed,
right.
and you only got half back.
Right. Who would do that? Who would make that
investment? Who? Right. No one. And the bank would be illegal.
Right.
That's exactly. I'm all about. I'm lifetime partnership. Have at it. Cohabitation. Have at it. But there should not be rules around. There should not be rules around the financial structure. Until a child's involved. When a child's involved, yeah, you need some rules. You need accountability on both sides.
Right.
But where no child is involved, there should be no legal rules as to how assets are managed if we decide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done it both ways now. So I'm remarried, and I've been married twice. And the first time, all of our finances and all of our everything was all combined.
Right.
And it was not so easy to pull apart.
Right.
And, it was really traumatizing and it was depressing. And this time we are married. We call it a marriage of romance. You know, we have a combined family together and we are legally married, but our finances are separate. We file our taxes separately. And maybe that's TMI. Sorry, husband. But, that's not what it's about. We're two adults who are choosing. I was just talking to my best friend this morning on a walk and saying that you do not become one. You can think that you become one, and no. that's very romantic, but you are two totally wholes living together and sharing a life together. There's going to be conflict. There's going to be parts that don't fit together perfectly. There's going to be shit you have to deal with the entire time.
Yeah.
You are two. And if you don't respect that, then someone is not telling the truth.
Right. It's, when that isn't the case, I completely agree with you.
Yeah.
Trauma.
Yeah.
When trauma happens, then you get to be one for a little while, and you realize being one's not so good. Being the two is the better way.
Yeah.
Because one is, you're right. One robs you of some of yourself.
Yeah.
And
if say you're caring for a sick partner or something like that, I wouldn't even say that you're one, but just one person is getting center stage for it. It's like it's someone else's turn. You definitely have to be taking turns.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, do you know my wife's story?
No.
Oh, she had head and neck cancer, and it was
horrible.
They cut her head off, and they burned half her face off, and it was like a 2-year journey. And for about a year and a half of it, she really couldn't do much of anything.
Oh my God!
And she's way better now. She's strong,
she's
and smart, and funny,
and
yeah, they got it all. She's,
that's amazing.
Yeah, no, we got very lucky.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But for that period, everything was on me. But I'm still in a relationship, and I mean like everything. I take care of the daughter, pay the bill, drive everywhere. Everything is on me.
Right.
And I've seen, and I don't think you have to have, like, I've seen codependent relationships where one person's the driver, and you look at that other person and you say, you're just not a whole person if you're letting somebody else. Now, she wasn't for good reason a whole person. She's back to former form and now in charge of everything again. But I always feel for people in that situation.
Yeah.
It's weird.
And people who have just a disability, who have to be really dependent on others or anything like that. It's hard to be. And so funny, coming back to the book, children are always in that situation. They are at the mercy of their parents.
That's my rant all the time about child. I have a lot of rants today.
That's okay.
Child therapy.
Yeah.
Is just teaching coping skills because you can't impact anything yet.
Yeah.
There
was some stand-up comedian, and I want to give them credit, but I don't remember who it was, but he was talking about how everybody has anxiety now, and anxiety is the new thing, and all these kids are saying they have anxiety.
Neil Brennan?
I don't remember who it was, but he was just like, that's all of childhood is anxiety.
Right.
Your whole childhood is anxiety.
Right.
You can't, you have no control over anything. You have no say in anything.
Right.
You have complete anxiety. And it's true what kids are saying now, because I think technology and all kinds of things about modern parenting and the world, it definitely all increases anxiety for sure. But
right.
My childhood was filled with anxiety. I had to be two completely different people.
Right.
Because I had, circling back to say that at my dad's house on the weekend, my dad found himself 22 and married. Look how we circled back.
They, well done.
Found himself 22 and married with kids and was like, I don't want this.
Right.
You know, my poor mom, because she was being a good Bobby Soxer and marrying her serious boyfriend and doing, you know, while everybody was starting to march for free love, my mom was picking out China patterns.
Mm.
And now they're married forever, 22. They haven't even, I don't even know if they'd slept together, you know.
Right.
And that's going to work out forever. Not if you want to be yourself.
Right.
So my dad was seeking.
And
he
was
seeking. He was meditating. He was doing drugs. He was searching. He was dating a lot, and he was doing the free love stuff.
Are the babies thing, is that part true?
No. My dad was not a cult leader. My dad was not a drug dealer. My dad is not Jackson. I, you know, then everything is turned way up in the book.
Okay.
The book is definitely a fiction. There are places and moments in the book that, you know, I experienced in my life, but it's fiction.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just that one part. So I'm only going to ask that question about that one part.
Yeah. I did get lost on a river, though.
Did you really?
Oh, yeah.
How'd you get lost on a river?
We drove past the drop spot. We drove to the place where they usually do a nice float, and it would be a two-hour float. No, let's go farther. We want to float for 4 hours. So you don't know how a river winds. And they dropped us off farther back. We didn't have food. We didn't have water. We had a raft. We didn't have shoes. It was on the Peace, like the Horse Creek in the Peace River in Florida, and we started floating. And we found ourselves out of the sunken boat in the water with alligators and snakes, feeling around for fallen trees that were banging into our legs. And eventually my brother saw a tent. My aunt didn't want us to go in it, just like it happens in the book. And we went, we pulled away from her and went in it anyway. And we got rescued at like 2 o'clock in the morning because we heard a boat. Yeah, that absolutely happened.
Fuck alligators, by the
way. It was crazy.
Alligators are monsters.
Yeah. And they are just, you can hear them. They make
you can hear them?
Like something like that when they're out.
Fuck.
So you can hear it in the night.
You
know what is an alligator.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The alligator part of that story terrifies me.
Yeah.
So your dad's experimenting.
My dad was experimenting much of the 80s. And he had some, you know, tough parents. He went to military school.
What did that do to your compass? Like, how do you pick which one to, how do you pick, like, which, it's one thing to have a role model. That's probably good.
Right.
To have, like, an array of role models all doing crazily different
like
things.
Rush Limbaugh and Timothy Leary.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly right. How did you figure that out? Or did you figure that out?
I didn't figure it out for a really long time. So, I'm good friends with my ex-husband, and we had a happy marriage for a long time, but I was still being a pleaser, too, in my marriage. So I was a pleaser, and I am. I'm a pleaser as a person. And as a kid, I was a good girl, and I did good girl things. And I was very confused about boys and love. That was very confusing. I didn't figure that out for a long time. I was married.
Do you have figured out?
I don't know. Do you know? I mean, what do we have figured out?
I was going to ask you, because if you haven't figured out,
please
explain.
Yeah, I could sound confident, but I'm probably still a moron in love. Because love is also a spell. You know, love is a spell. Like, that's what complicates the logic with the bank.
It's a spell that makes you work to have the spell. Like, most spells just happen to you. Like, with the love spell, you got to fucking work all the time.
Yeah. It's true. I didn't know that because my first marriage was very traditional. He worked all the time. He was a workaholic. He was away 5 days a week. And
that actually sounds good.
Yeah. There was some magic to it because we lasted for many, many years. We were happy for, I think 15 years. We were unhappy for two.
Okay.
We were together for 18 total.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And we had three beautiful kids together.
There you go.
We had a really traditional split. He worked and brought home money and I did all the other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was complete in that way, but I also wasn't paying our mortgage, wasn't investing our money, wasn't I was like almost like a child in that way. It was like
basically, you know, got an allowance,
like a housewife.
And, yeah.
And I was a stay at home mom, and that the book kind of was born out of my stay at home mom existential dilemma. You know, like my brain is dying.
Yeah.
And if I talk about the potty anymore, I'm going to not
kill myself. Yeah. And, yeah.
I'm just not going to. And I love being with my kids. I was really meant for that. But there's this intellectual side of me that like really needed stimulation because Dora wasn't going to do it.
What? No, Dora does not do it. What's your process for writing?
Well, my process then was I started writing whenever, and I started writing memoirs, and I had written that River Trip chapter as a memoir. And then I was like, but I love my family and I want them to still love me and talk to me. So I'm not going to do that. I'm going to write fiction. And
you,
I started writing.
You just named my dilemma on the show.
Yeah.
I love my family.
Yeah.
But this is about like getting.
But the truth is the truth.
This is about getting naked and yeah.
So
you solved it, that though.
Yeah. Well, the book really helped.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, you solved it with the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the way that I wrote was eventually I realized I was never going to finish anything unless I got up every morning at 5 a.m. I read The Artist's Way. Have you heard of that book?
Talk about The Artist's Way every third episode
you
of the show.
Cameron wrote it.
Julia Cameron.
Julia Cameron.
I went crazy, like literally crazy, like underwear, BB gun, hunting aliens, crazy.
Okay.
I was got diagnosed like a gazillion drugs. Or was given like
that's
a gazillion drugs.
Yeah.
One of them was suicidal. One of them's lithium. Lithium is actually toxic to me. So the drug that was supposed to save me from killing myself was actually killing me. So I told my whole world, I'm getting off of everything. I'm going to learn to manage it myself. Everybody except my daughter left me because everybody thought I was crazy.
Right.
And said, you're crazy. And it's bad form to tell a crazy person that they're crazy. But they did it. And so I detoxed for like a whole summer. It was insane.
Wow.
When I got done, I said, okay, now I got to manage this because it's a chronic condition. I'm going to have it the rest of your life.
Right.
So I have to manage it. So I do two things. I get up in the morning and first thing I do, morning pages, three pages every day, handwritten every day.
Right.
And then meditate.
Write anything.
Like, write the word
same word
doorknob.
Over again. Right.
Yep. But you got it. Yeah. Right. And I talk about that all the time in here. So you do the morning pages.
No, I have to get back to it. I did.
Okay.
I did.
But you're not crazy. You don't need it every day.
I'm not crazy, but I have been through two depressions and I understand that. And I just get that. I get that they were not long. One was during my divorce because my whole world just flipped over. And the other was, I think, perimenopausal. And so it came upon me and I didn't even know. And I was chronically ill. And I actually, in 2022, had three surgeries in 1 year. And then, honestly, started some hormone replacement. And now I'm sane again. But all women are really going through an interesting time between somewhere in 40 to somewhere after 50.
I got in trouble for I don't listen to the show a lot, but because I did it, so I know what's
you're
in
always,
it.
You know, recording it.
Right. Yeah. So, but my wife's listening to the show. She has it on in the car, and we're talking about menopause. And I go, "Oh yeah, Trisha's in menopause." And she's like, "What the fuck?" Oh, sorry. sorry about that.
Oops.
That's a lot.
The Artist's Way.
The Artist's Way. Okay, thank you.
So I really started making headway when I started getting up every morning at 5 because my kids they could maybe mill around if they were up early, but they didn't need me till 7 to get them to school by 9. So I would get up every morning at 5 and I would write from 5 to 7. And then there were many days where I might write some more in that day after they were at school. But if I didn't do that, that was where the gobbledygook came out. Sometimes something brilliant comes out at that time, but you're half asleep. And you're still – for me, I'm still kind of dreaming. And so the bullshit is pulled back. Like that bullshit screen of what are people going to think for me.
Right.
Or, you know, what – is this any good? Like that wasn't – I was barely awake.
That's perfect.
Yeah. So that was a really –
That's a great solution.
That was a big jump in getting it, you know, organized and getting it.
Do you handwrite? You type? What do you do?
I cannot handwrite. I think I'm dyslexic. My hands just don't.
They just don't do it.
Communicate with my brain. Yeah, I'll write fours instead of K's. I put an E at the end of things that don't have E's.
I'd like to read a handwritten book of yours. Oh, I think
it would be a little scary. It would read a little bit like a serial killer manifesto. But I really love editing and editors.
How long did it take you to finish?
12 years.
Okay. Did you outline it?
No. But the next one, the one that I'm starting soon, is outlined. It's half written, but I need to rewrite it because due to someone else's mental illness in my life, someone very dear to me got sick very many years ago in 2016. And I just was like, I need to be paying attention. And I put down everything. I put down all writing. And I have written a bit since. I had a couple of stories published in 2018. But I had written half of this next book. That's wildly different than this one, but also similar in that it's a claustrophobic dysfunctional family story.
Okay.
But it's just a wildly different story. And I need to go back and rewrite it because now I'm me. So I can't, you know, paint the way I painted then. I need to paint the way I paint now.
Right.
It'll be similar, but I have to start it all over again, and I'll probably have to do the artist's way again to get it going.
Do you write music?
I don't. So, all my children are musicians, and I'm not a musician.
Oh. Huh. Are you?
I'm music adjacent.
But do you think you're bad at it, or are you just not interested?
No,
in it?
I just, one of those things that we didn't talk about in my childhood is that I didn't really have the confidence. So I really liked music. I was interested in it. I picked it up. I sang with a band once or twice. My dad's a musician, and I just was scared that I wouldn't be good at it. So I was afraid of it. So I avoided it. I did musical theater though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was a theater nerd in high school.
So one of the things about writing songs is when you write it and time passes, and songwriting is weird because when I'm blessed to be able to perform what I write. So when you do that a couple of years after you've written it, the thing that you were just describing, I'm not the guy that wrote that song anymore. So I want to change it.
Right.
But I can't. Is there anything in Naked Girl that you would change stepping off of it now?
I think I would have answered differently. Years ago. Now, no. I wouldn't change anything about it.
That's a good place to be.
I wouldn't change anything about it because it's my story. And I think I'm actually quite surprised that I think it's a good book.
It's a very good book.
Thank you.
It's a really good book.
Thank you.
I will be selling this book for you.
I really appreciate that a lot. It's hard to sell books.
It is very hard to sell books.
You'd be surprised the genres.
Are you doing an audio?
I'm doing Bookstagram. I am doing an audio, and it's finished and recorded. I did it with Silver Hollow Audio.
Okay.
And he's fantastic, Brett Barry. And it will be out in May, hopefully. I think it's like in line right now to be released.
Come back when that's released and we'll promote that.
To.
Okay, cool.
Love to. Music.
No, your father's. I'm back to your father. Oh, sorry.
Okay. That's all right. Let's do it.
Okay. Your relationship with your birth father.
Yes.
Are you let down at all? Or inspired? Where is it?
I don't know where my mother's let down with him when I was a kid began and where my being let down began. So, because again, I was a kid.
Right.
And my mom had a really bad experience of that situation because getting divorced at like, I think she was probably like 28 or something or 29. And she was a homemaker for a little while. And then she was a teacher, and teachers didn't make much then. And she had two small children. And my dad is trying to figure himself out and exploring. And, if I got left in that way, I would have been pretty angry about it, especially at that time. And it was life breaking for her.
Right.
And so she remade her life ultimately, but it was a hard go for a little while.
Right.
I know that at some point I had daycare and she had like a little arrangement because she had a second job as a travel agent. And she had like a little bit of daycare worked out with the bowling alley daycare room for the leagues that she could drop us off in there for a couple hours so she could work another shift. And I remember weirdly the inside of the bowling alley daycare room. Like I remember there was green carpet and like a little sort of jail TV up in the corner where I would watch Sesame Street or whatever.
Right.
I have memories of this. But I also, my dad did have us in some uniquely adventurous situations, but he was also really funny, really fun, and really lively. And I got introduced to like really healthy eating and juice and sometimes in weird ways, but music and community and hippie stuff and protesting. And we did the Great Peace March and my mom's house. I did all of the conventional American kid things that kind of turned me into a person who knows how to comport myself in society. And I got taught to say thank you. And I got taught to, fix myself up and want good grades and try hard for myself. So I feel like I'm expanded because of all
I was about to say. It it comes across like best of both.
I think so.
Best of both worlds now. Yeah. Yeah. But when you're in it, so I would imagine when you're a child and your parents get divorced,
yeah,
you crave a path. And in your case, the path forked three different ways.
Yeah.
And you had to pick. And I imagine that to be too much for a child to do.
It was. And my brother got mad about that. And I was a pleaser. So I would be a good hippie at my dad's and a good Jap at my mom's.
Right.
Which is why. And I was good at that because I was also an actor. And I was good at doing that. And by the time I got to be I was about to graduate college. And I guess what I was supposed to do was get my master's degree and go back to Miami and start a family and, you know, do whatever. And I was like, I'm either going into the Peace Corps or I'm going to New York. And my mother at that time, my dad would answer to that. And I appreciate this and need more than this, that my dad would be like, great.
Right. Right.
And my mom was like, if you get into graduate school, will you please not go into the Peace Corps?
Right.
And I was like, deal. So then I got into graduate school, so I had to move to New York because I promised my mother I wouldn't go to the Peace Corps. She was scared I was going to, you know, to go out like a comet.
The other interesting piece about the book that I wanted to ask you about, you have an interesting, I would imagine, you have an interesting relationship with sex. formed by all these different paths.
Yeah.
That's a question.
A lot of, yeah, okay. That was a question. Yeah. I was waiting for the question.
It sounded like a sentence.
I had a lot of experiences. I definitely had early exposure to sex and sexual situations in my dad's half of my being, like at my dad's house.
Right.
They were nudist and they were hippie and there was a lot of people around who felt the same way. A lot of, you know, like the babies as a cult being cultivated by my dad was not a thing, but like lots of naked people hanging around in the hot tub was definitely a thing.
So how did
boogie nights, you know?
Right. So how does that inform?
Well, it's confusing. It was confusing for my brother and I,
right?
Especially because it was like verboten and there wasn't really like a lot of sex talks going on. And it was really much more conventional at my mom and dad's house.
Right.
During the week. It was much more like I was learning about that from, you know, Family Ties and the Cosby Show and Different Strokes and those types of things. And, you know, we knew my parents had sex. They would, the lock would go on the door and then we were like, go downstairs.
Okay.
But at my dad's house, it was really like sort of blatant. And then in the hippie world, really at that time.
Right.
And honestly, I think you would call me a girl with daddy issues, I would say. Like Sienna is a person with daddy issues.
Right.
My husband jokes that he capitalized on my daddy issues to get me. He's like, I saw that about you. I knew that about you. And I took advantage of it. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's all right. It worked
but,
out.
I definitely worked that out with him. I think that the answer to it for me was just to be able to talk about and say, like, this is me. This is what I own. This is what I'm about sexually. And I'm really sorry if that disappoints you, Mom. And I'm really sorry if that disappoints you, Dad. I don't think it does. I don't think they care about that.
Right.
And I have great relationships with both of them, needs to be said. Like, I'm close with my mom and I'm close with my dad and my stepdad. Like, I'm really close with all of them. And they're all great people and they really contribute to my life. But as a teenager, I was really looking for, like, I was really looking for someone. I was always in a relationship. I was always playing house and trying to figure it out.
Because I imagine if you take a people-pleasing teenager and you show her people having sex every weekend, mm-hmm. That's not going to be a traditional path.
Yeah. When I was 16, my boyfriend was 21.
Oof.
Yeah.
Oof.
And I didn't go to my senior prom because by the time I was 18, he was 23, and I wasn't taking a 23-year-old to the prom. But I did stay with him. I stayed with him until I was 21 and a half. Yeah, we were together for 4.5 years. It's like a first marriage. And I just wished him a happy birthday the other day. He's a fantastic person. He turned out to be a great dad, too. I don't know why I needed that.
Do you – creativity, do you make it? Do you channel it? Does God give it to you?
That's a great question. I definitely I will say, and I'm amazing. I'm amazed by people who are prolific because it comes in spurts for me.
Right.
I work as a creative. I work as a designer and a house flipper. Mm. That's how I make money. And I get really excited, like when I have to do a bar mitzvah or something for one of my kids, and I get to like, or I get to decorate a hot, I hate cooking. I don't express myself that way, but I love to make, I'm trying so hard to like grow into it, but I hate it.
I hate it too. It's I so hate annoying. Cooking.
You're just going to eat it.
You're just going to eat it. It takes so damn long. Yeah,
and it's probably and just as good if you just take a tortilla and stick some almond butter and just like shove it in.
It is. Mouth. And there's always mess.
Yeah.
There's nothing good about cooking.
I know.
I'm with you.
I'm so.
If we were together, we would starve.
We would starve.
Yeah. You need one. Does your husband cook?
He does. He's a better cook than I am, but he doesn't. He's not game to do it. He's not someone who's like humming with an apron. Oh, okay. Like really expressing himself. When the kids leave the house, we'll eat girl dinner every night. It'll be girl dinner.
When my wife got diagnosed with cancer, it was really bad news. She sits down. She goes, "We're gonna die." And I'm like, why? She goes, you can't cook. I'm going to go down for 18 months and we're going
to
die.
It's time to start the meal train.
Yeah, oh, believe me. I did the almond butter and.
Yeah. It's like, I'll do all the things. I will, you know, I'll massage your feet. I'll bathe you. I'll wipe you. But I'm not making lasagna.
Yeah, I can't.
I just can't. It's too many steps. What's the point?
So creativity.
Yes. So creativity.
What is the point?
There really is no point. So we can just keep talking about whatever. Creativity for me, it's like a well. Like it'll get all full and be overflowing, and I'm so stimulated and I'm so into it. And I'm an Aries, so I think that I don't give much to astrology, but people who do say you just like fly off at an idea and then kind of fizzle out at some point. I will get so much energy and have such a great idea and be so, and I really have to harness that and use it for as long as I can, because then I'll wake up the next day and it's like, you know, that doesn't, maybe that's not such a great, you know, I'll question it, or I will just steadily go with something to the end, and then the well is empty and it needs to refill.
Right.
And it refills when it refills.
Do you like writing?
I love it.
You do?
Yeah, I love writing, but I don't write every day. It's not. I don't like writing the way people like yoga, where it's like, oh, until I've done my yoga. I can't.
Right.
It's not like that. It's like something I force myself to do. And then once I'm doing it, I'm like, oh, I'm good at this. And
that's really a great feeling, isn't it?
Expressing myself.
You crack off a sentence and you're like, wait a second.
Yeah.
See, that's my creativity question is like, that's like sometimes that'll happen in music where I'll write something. I'll be like, I'm not that good.
Yeah.
Something.
I heard you play a lot. I think you're great.
Oh, thank you. You're very sweet. So I just did this Lifted project. You know about this?
Yeah, I know. I saw it on your website. Oh, okay. Lifted,
so I just got the recording of it.
That's so cool.
And I had that moment this morning. I'm like, that's just way better than me. There's no way. So I'm in that mindset. Like, I think creativity is channeled.
Yeah.
And because.
Like it's like coming from somewhere. There's this great writer, Hannah Tinti, who I studied with, and she's really cool. And she described to me, she may have been quoting someone else, that every day that you write, it's like you're getting from the surface of the ocean where the sun is and everything, and you're out in the air, another layer deeper down until you get like into that under the gulf, like the stream that goes under. And then once you stay, if you just write every day, once you stay in that stream, or if you play music every day, you'll stay in that stream that makes it really easy. And, you know, you're just cruising with the current deep, deep, deep at the bottom of the ocean. And then every day you skip it, you start going back up toward the surface.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like floating on a raft, that's like the guy in Castaway right now. And I need to just do the work.
That's a great analogy, though.
Yeah. I need to do the work of the artist's way, like to get to do the writing doorknob over and over again,
right.
until it becomes a sentence about doorknobs, until I'm not about doorknobs anymore, until I can get to that current.
You ever read Stephen King's On Writing?
Love it. It's the best writing book.
That is the best writing book ever.
If you're a writer,
ever,
it is the best
writing
book ever.
It really – I love the one – my one takeaway, because I used to ghostwrite books.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and I hated it.
Yeah.
I ghostwrote. Rich people's memoirs.
Cool.
So what would happen is like a wife would hire me and say like in June, she'd say like, hey, I want to give my husband his biography for Christmas. So I have to go interview everybody and
that's cool.
Put that together. It was a cool gig.
Yeah.
There was money in it.
Yeah.
But it's brain numbing because not everybody's interesting enough to be a book.
Right.
For inspiration, I read On Writing and I loved his one thing. Like if you want to be a writer, first thing you have to do is read.
Yeah.
Right? And I was like, wow. So I do that with my music. I'm like, all right, John, if you want to be a songwriter, first thing you got to do is listen to music.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Reading is really important. In fact, what you asked, what inspires creativity? When I read writers who are badass, you know, just fantastic writers.
Right.
Like, for me, it's Karen Russell, Jeff Eugenides, Jonathan Franzen, like all these like rock star lit fiction writers. Zadie Smith, there's like so, I mean, I could keep naming, there's a bunch, but, and I read their sentences and I'm like, and it, that, I start writing in my head because I start getting excited the way when you're a musician and you're jamming with someone and they come up with something really great and you want to go with that, makes you think of your own melody.
Yeah. Do you, do you catch ideas? Like if you're out and you're like, oh, wait, I have an idea, what do you do with it?
That's the only way I get ideas.
So what do you do with it?
I write it down. Notes on my phone is filled with things that I don't even necessarily know what it means anymore.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. Phrases, sentences, story ideas, it's all written down. And I am assuming I'll go back to it at some point, but I almost never do.
I have the same fucking problem. I have like a song idea.
Yeah.
And I'll video it so I don't forget what I was doing. Never go back.
But I never go back. But don't you think of your brain as a computer that contains everything that you ever experience? So I feel like it's still informing, even if I wrote it down and I took the minute to say, this is a real idea I want to remember and I want to put it in there. It's like you're typing it into the computer and it's like in the code somewhere. It's like in the ones and zeros.
You're younger than me.
You
reach an age where your brain is no longer remembers everything that happened to it.
Are you always reaching for a word? I'm always reaching for a word.
Well, I know why you're always reaching for a word, because you craft them. Well, so it's not simple talking.
It's true. I prefer to use the correct word.
For right. Yeah. So it's work for you. I mean, it's an art form, but it's work. Poetry. You write poetry?
I do not write poetry.
Why not?
I tried writing some poetry in high school. It was bad. It was
no, because I read the book and I'm like, this lady's a poet.
I am not a poet. I'm really not. Unless it's prose poetry. I could write prose poetry.
I would have bet my feet you wrote poetry.
I do not write poems. I might think them.
Right.
But I don't. I see them. I like to think that I make a poem out of things when I'm designing. Like, you know, when you're making everything in a room speak to everything else. So that you can take it in as one whole. So it's just a different kind of expression. I don't write poems.
How'd you know when the book was done?
I actually know the answer to this, and I could get me to mention my friend Rashina, who is an amazing editor, and she edited a lot of my book. And I had gone with a good friend of mine, Rebecca, and we had gone to do a writing retreat weekend in Philadelphia. I think that she was living in Maryland at the time, and I was living here, and we met in the middle, Philadelphia, in a hotel. We weren't going to leave the hotel for the weekend, and sometimes when you do that, you write doorknob a whole bunch of times for the weekend.
Right.
And sometimes when you do it, you get a real – and I was getting close to the end, but I wasn't sure. And I was writing the last chapter. And Rebecca was having a terrible weekend with her writing. She was really blocked. And every time we would just meet for dinner. And she was like walking around out on the street and trying to get inspiration. I was like I would order oatmeal for breakfast. And I was just at the
zone.
Wherever – in my room typing. Yep. And at some point, I went downstairs for a minute to ask Rashina an editorial question, and I had just written the last sentence of the book, and I felt like there was no more after that in this story, and I said, I think I'm done. How do you know when you're done?
Right.
And she said to me, do you think you're done? And I was like, I really think I'm done. She said, then I think you're done.
Then
that's
you're
the
done.
Last chapter. So now you got to
– That's awesome.
I had to rewrite it 100 times, but
– So
– But the end always stayed the end.
How did you take it personally when you got edited?
No, I love editors.
You do
writers,
love editors.
Stop thinking. Listen to me, writers. Stop thinking that your work is perfect. The biggest thing that I took from Stephen King's on writing was To Kill Your Darlings.
Yes.
Killing your darlings, and it's really hard. You'll write something beautiful, some whole episode, some whole chapter that's magnificent.
And adverbs. Kill adverbs and your darling. Kill your darlings.
Yeah. I learned that from my English teacher and my he's in my acknowledgments.
Oh, cool.
To not write passively, to write actively.
The other thing that's hard about writing is pace, because some good ideas just take too long and you can't use them.
Yeah.
Right? That's true. And it's hard to step off of a good idea that takes too long.
And you put work into it, and it's beautiful, and you love it, and you're attached to it. Then take it and use it for some other character some other time.
That's what I say about bridges and songs.
Yeah.
So, you know, bridges in a song?
Yeah, uh-huh.
I'd never have bridges in my song. So I'm like, no, that's another song. If I like it enough to put it in here, I can just do it
You could be like Billy Joel and just take four songs and mash them all together.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
I love Billy Joel.
Man. Me too.
He's crazy with his hands, though.
Is he?
He beats the crap out of his hands and then goes and plays piano like that.
How does he beat the crap out of his
motorcycle?
Oh wow!
Yeah, so I didn't know that about so him. Stupid, but
it's a risk if you're if you're a piano player.
Do you ever write a play?
I have not written a play.
Script at all?
No.
Because you're good with dialogue.
Thank you. I've heard that. That is a strong area for me.
Yeah.
And the truth is my next book should be a screenplay and not a book.
So why don't you make
it? I don't know how to do that. There's so much. So screenplays are so limiting. You're not supposed to describe. You're supposed to leave for the director all the things. I'm bossy, John. I'm a bossy control freak.
Right. All right. So you need to write a book.
So I need to put all the colors.
Well, you write the book and then hire somebody to do this.
I'm that person in the school group that's like, I'll do all the work. You guys can just sit there.
Nice.
If you want to be in the group where you don't do anything, then this is the right group.
Then I'm your group.
Yeah.
But do you – why should it be a movie?
It's very filmic and it's very it takes place on Mars, my next – book.
Okay, that's weird. A departure.
Yeah, and so one of the reasons why I stalled on it was because I was trying to write the science in that kind of Andy Weir, the Martian
way.
I
love Andy Weir.
Me too. He's fantastic.
But and he hilarious.
He's great.
Yeah.
He's a master of what he does, but I don't do what he does.
Right.
I shudder to say, because I don't like to invoke, but Woody Allen, it's more like Woody Allen in space, what I'm doing. So the science doesn't matter. It doesn't.
That's a great premise, though. That's a great premise.
Yeah.
Are you going to regret? Now that you have Naked Girl out, are you going to regret in the future that you can't write a memoir because you already have half one?
I'd still write a memoir.
But it's without repeating yourself?
I don't think I would write a memoir. My memoir, I don't know if it would be – I could do it without repeating myself, because I think that the most interesting thing about memoirs is not the big sweeping story. It's the little things you zero in on. So you can write a memoir without mentioning your parents at all, because I could write a memoir of my experience of Hebrew school. You know, I could write a memoir
of
how it was to be in a sorority, because all of these things were parts of my life, because I was still trying to be a very good Miami Beach Jappy girl.
What percentage of you is still hippie?
I get described by my friends as a Jappy hippie.
A jippy.
A jippy. I'm a jippy.
Very nicely done.
There is a big percentage of me I'm not really a religious person at all, even though I'm Jewish and that's my tribe. I would say I'm more of like a Judaist.
Okay, fair enough.
I really like Buddhism because the Buddha is a man who has ascended to his best form.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what we should all be
and
going
says
for.
You can too.
Yeah, that is possible for you.
That's what drew me to Buddhism too, is the like everything, every other religion had like some perfect thing that I was that I was ordained never to achieve.
Right.
And Buddhism's like, no, I did it to show you it can be done.
Right. Can be done.
Now you do it.
Right. And every religion has that, except they call it God. And then that makes it something otherworldly. And
yeah, but you can't do God.
Right.
Like in Christianity, you can't do God.
Right.
In Buddhism, you can be a Buddha.
Yeah.
That's the goal. Be a Buddha.
To be a Buddha.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what I love.
You meditate?
I do. Yeah.
What's your practice? What do you do?
I cannot do it sitting up. I'm too fidgety.
Okay.
I need to do it laying flat on my back. I really like to do it after exercise because I have gotten my wiggles and my, you know, my whatever rage out.
That's what yoga is.
Yeah.
It's preparing to meditate.
Right.
Right.
It's preparation to meditate. Well, the yoga poses are preparation to meditate. And yes. And so I like doing yoga. I like doing all kinds of exercise. But after I'm done with that, then I will lay flat. I used to use a mantra, and now I find it easy to listen to someone guiding, and I'm not actually listening to them. I'm just sort of zoning out, and then I'm under.
Are you do you do it daily?
I wish I should, and I sometimes do.
It's hard. I have to do it twice a day. I took TM.
That's great.
I took TM. It's great, but I paid like $5,000 for something that should be free.
Yes, I know. It's true. But sometimes you have to do that. Sometimes you have to pay $5,000 for something that should be free.
It really should be free.
And then what is your – how long do you meditate for? When you
20 minutes twice a day. Yeah. That's TM.
I like a longer – I like to do it for –
Well, I've done it. I've – what people don't – writing and meditation have this in common. They're both physical activities. Mm-hmm. And like sitting for an hour and a half is hard.
Yeah.
Laying.
And keeping your mind focused.
Yeah, yeah. But same thing with writing. Like writing is a physical activity.
Yeah.
People like sitting that long and in the same position, that's physical.
It is.
In addition, what's your workout?
I do everything. My yoga is walking.
Okay.
I love walking, walking and walking and walking. I will walk for miles and miles, but it's time consuming.
Yes.
So I'll also do like body weight strength, Pilates, bar, yoga, strength.
Do you go to a gym? Do you do it at home?
I went to gyms for years. I was a gymnast when I was a kid, so I never really stopped working out. It's not something I
– That's the trick. See, yeah. That's why you look like you do. That's the trick.
I am muscular, but
– No, I mean you look in shape because and younger than you say you are because you never stopped working out.
I'm 50.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a good 50.
Just turned 50 in March. Thank
you. Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Now you're kicking the shit out of 50.
Yeah,
nicely done.
I'd like to think I'm beating 50.
I would not have thought that. Well done.
Thank you.
Bravo.
Thank you.
I'm 90.
Say the same thing.
There you go.
It. You look incredible.
I'm killing 90. Am I not?
You're so sharp.
Right?
Sharp
still.
As a test. Incredible. That's amazing. You are really the ass of 90.
Yeah, I'm beating the shit out of 90.
That's what I should start doing is just telling people I'm 70.
Oh, yeah. I do it all the time.
It's great. It's a great idea.
It's the only way now that people will say you look good for your age is if I say I'm 90.
That's perfect.
Do you keep physical notebooks?
I don't.
And you don't journal.
I don't journal. I've tried. It's garbage.
Journaling's hard.
I'm so jealous of journaling people.
Journaling's hard.
My sister-in-law journals and she's just like, just journal about it. And I'm like, I know that means something for you. And that's so fantastic. And I'm jealous, but I cannot. That's not a verb for me.
What's cool about journaling is having a bunch of journals that you did.
I wish.
That's the only.
I wish.
I hate it. I do it, but I hate it. But it is cool. I love composition notebooks.
Yeah.
And I have like, I'll bet 50 of them
filled.
And I'm like, okay, I hated every minute of doing that, but I like looking at 50 composition notebooks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I also worry about what my journals would say because I have my same friend, Rashina, she sent me a journal page that she's a journaler and she wrote something about both of us making out with a boy in Hebrew school in one of the classrooms when we were like 13 and I read her journal entry and, you know, we've talked about my whole like sex thing and being exposed early and everything. So the first time I kissed a boy, like a French kissed a boy I was 11 and I was at sleepaway camp and he was 13 and that like I had been waiting for that. So
you're my hero.
It's so early. And so Rashina was like 13 or 14 and apparently this was her first kiss. And so I read in the journal that like we're joking and trying to joke, passing this boy back and forth because he was an actor and we wanted to see kissing on TV.
Did this really happen?
This really happened.
Okay.
She journaled about it, about feeling very strange because it was her first kiss and I was in there with my tongue too.
Right.
And for me, it was like my 20th kiss and it was just like an activity.
Right. It's this
day.
Or going for a walk. And,
and I was like, as an adult, I was like, I'm so sorry that I contaminated your first kiss with my lunacy, basically,
well,
you know, my childhood trauma.
But she decided to be there.
She's still a great friend of mine. I talk to her every week. Yeah.
That being afraid things. So I tell my family, I'm like, listen, if you want me in your life, don't read any of those books.
That is where I.
That will end everything. It will end your world.
And I think my sister-in-law is like that. I think she's just putting her bad thoughts that's actually the name of her new song.
Oh, nicely done.
She's putting her bad thoughts there. So she's just taking the part of herself that rages and is upset and just like letting the air out of that balloon
onto the journal. Yeah, that's what I do.
It's helpful for people. Well, I can't do it.
It is helpful because you can't – people say be authentic. And authenticity is great.
Yes.
It's not functional.
Right.
You can't.
If you're authentic, you're not going to have very many friends.
Right. So
you got to pretend a little.
Yeah. So that's what I do. I was like, such a fucking asshole. Yeah. Blah, 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 blah.
If I have to listen for one more.
I can't believe she thinks that she wrote a good song. All the time.
Yeah. I've read some pretty terrible writing and had to say, oh, well, I like this part. You know?
Right.
So I just want to find something good to say.
Did you know how the book was going to end? I know you didn't know how it was going to end.
No, I really didn't. I didn't know. It wasn't outlined.
What was your first thought of for it then?
And in fact, the part where the brother comes in and it becomes his perspective, that was not planned. It just was like, well, I've gotten to this place where now they've come of age and they've separated. How do I talk about him anymore? He's got to talk about himself.
Right. So what was the initial vision for the book if you didn't know how it was going to end?
to get them through, that I was just like, I know I can like write these kids way to salvation.
Okay.
Write them through to some safe place.
Right.
And so then when I felt that they had gotten there, and it was, I kind of was important for me because it's not a mystery. It's not a thriller.
Right.
So I don't need to put the pieces back together and make it all add up in reverse.
It's a little bit of a thriller because, well, in this way, as I interrupt my guest, I'm sorry.
That's good. All you thriller fans, Naked Girl. But
it always has this foreboding, something bad's going to happen. Yeah.
Well, a lot of bad things happen.
But we're like something like apocalyptically bad is going to happen to her.
Yeah.
And you like you're uncomfortable in a good way through the whole book.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I think you need that. The way to keep someone turning pages is you really have to keep that tension. You have
yeah.
To keep that
that's what it has. That's
yeah.
You know, if I was a writer, I would have used that word. Yeah. But it's funny.
Thank you. I've tried.
It's hard to be. It's hard to have tension and be funny at the same time.
It's a
good book.
The Jews are pretty good at having tension and being funny.
But your tension was. It's like a formative tension.
Yeah.
It's different. I never read anything like that before. It was
cool.
No, it was really cool. Yeah.
Thank you. I do. It's not.
I'll blurb the next one for you if you want.
I would love that. I would love that.
Okay, done.
I think you need to keep it. You need to keep something steady in your pacing, and then there needs to be times where it speeds up. And then, you know, when you're watching a TV show, which more people do than read now, so it's a good analogy. There's like those. Expositional episodes where you find out a lot of stuff and it's a really great episode but then you need that episode where a lot happens.
Something has to happen. Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, there it's sort of like that, but when you're writing it episodically, like my book is episodic because it goes over so many years, you need each individual chapter needs to have its own climax and then the whole book needs to have its own climax. And
If I ever wrote a novel, it would be all exposition and nothing would ever happen. And so that's why I know that about myself. I'm like, no, I mean,
people who read genre think that about lit fiction, you know?
Yeah, but it's not.
It's not true at all. It's not true at all. The biggest things happen because something huge can happen, as you know, and experiencing yourself right inside your own head and no one even sees it and your whole world is upended.
Right. Do you have tattoos?
No, I have this fake one that my friend's daughter gave me the other day.
Okay, that's pretty though.
Yeah.
How come you don't have tattoos?
I don't. You know what?
I picked you as tattoo chick.
Yeah, for my 50th birthday, I was going to get a tattoo, and I still think it's coming. And I have to first decide whether I'm doing it as an act of rebellion against my mother, which I don't want to rebel against my mother. I love my mother; she's wonderful, but she would be horrified to see a tattoo on me.
Right.
Or whether I really want one. I need to make sure first that I really
What would you get?
I do want right on this finger, and I talked about this with my best friend because she said she's going to get it if I don't because it's so great. Really tiny to say Jewish mother.
Oh, very nice.
Right here. But really I wanted something that just represented my family, my children, my family members, and my loves. Maybe something botanical that just has a flower for each.
Well, you're a designer, so you could design it.
Yeah. I know what artist I would go to already. I've got it all picked out. I just haven't pulled the trigger. Also, something about like not getting wet for several days or whatever. It's
timing. Yeah.
Like I want a puppy too, but I don't want the year that the puppy's a lunatic.
Right.
Because my dear puppies both passed away in 2002 and I'm really missing dog in my life. We borrow our friend's dog a lot, but I'm missing that. I'm such a babies and puppies person.
I've never been without a dog.
I can't. This is our first. My husband and I keep saying this is our first time in our lives we've ever just been without a dog, and it's terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
I even got myself a dog in college.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
I did not have a dog in college.
Yeah, I had a dog in college. I dated
a dog in college. Sorry. It was sitting right there.
We all.
It was so low on the tree. I apologize. I'll edit that. No,
we
no,
won't,
I won't
name names.
Right. So. But you know who you are.
Yeah. I dated a dog, but when you say it about a man, it's a different description.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Did you date a dog?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
I dated a few dogs.
Oh, all right. Well, dogs have a purpose.
They do.
All right. Did your dog serve the purpose?
Yes, absolutely.
Very
all
good.
Dogs serve a purpose.
Book is Naked Girl.
Naked Girl.
I get it anywhere, but I want to go to a small bookstore and ask for it.
Yes, that would be great.
Okay, awesome. You blew through an hour.
That's already. Great. That was fast.
Well, you're good.
And easy.
And you will come back when the audiobook is,
I would love to.
Is done?
I would love to. This was great.
All right. Thank you so much for doing it. You're fun.
Thank you.
Even
so
if
much.
You don't have something coming out, just come back.
I just come back and shoot the shit. Yeah. I love it.
Would you?
I would love it.
Yeah. All right. Wonderful. All right. I'm going to call us out of here.
Okay.
I'm John. That was home for me. You're fun, man.
Thank you so much.
Was it fun?
Yeah, I was scared, but it was great. I've never done this before.